Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and we're glad to have you back with us as my extremely attractive audio engineer and I bask in the glow of yet another wedding. Yes, you know that you're in midlife when the passing of time is marked by weddings, which it has been now for the last few weeks. Another wedding, my good friend Nate Enyart married his beautiful blushing bride, Crystal, and I and my extremely attractive audio engineer were in attendance. We want to wish them congratulations and all the best and God's blessings and all of that. And, well, it's just much better than having the passing of time marked by funerals, which is, that's later. That's when you know you're all grown up. All right, so congrats to Nate and Crystal, and it was disturbing the amount of young people and the amount of tattoos at the wedding. But we're not going to mention that.
Why not? You already mentioned
it. I already mentioned it. It's just disturbing the younger generation. I just can't relate. I mean, I can relate to, you know, a Navy vet. He's got an anchor tattooed on his shoulder or something. But the modern tattoos, I just can't relate to. And what it is, it's the amount of tattoos and then the complete shamelessness with which they are displayed amongst the younger set that is disturbing to me. But perhaps I'm just old, grumpy, grouchy, old fuddy-duddy, I suppose. And I'm happy with that. Thank you very much. But the wedding itself was beautiful. And the service was extremely Christian, as you can well imagine. And a good time was had by all. All right. Do I want to go to the news yet? Well, we could start with Barry. He's not bombing Syria. He's not. Last week, we were all on the edge of our seat. We thought he was going to start bombing Syria. This week, we find our feckless president doing all the right things for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. I think his girl, Troika, told him that, hey, listen, Barry, you've already got enough of a distraction with your own, you know, indecisiveness. We don't need a war this week to distract from Benghazi, but keep your powder dry. That's the advice of Valerie Jarrett, Samantha Power, and Susan Rice. The girl troika who actually run the country has Barry not bombing this week, at least as we go to air right now. And now all week, Matt Drudge has tortured us by keeping the link up on the middle of his site. Tim Tebow's been released from the NFL, leaving me to wonder if there's something more significant in his future than mere circus life, perhaps. But of course, if he is signed by another team, I'll jump on that bandwagon so hard they'll have to replace the shock absorbers. You all know that. So we'll see what happens, but Mr. Tebow has been released from the circus, at least as of this moment. All right. I don't know what that's called for. That's just rubbing it in. Well, we'll see what happens with Tim. He'll probably land on his feet, and maybe in Buffalo. Now, that would be great. All right, but I don't want him in the circus. I want him to devote his life to something more meaningful than men in tight pants playing in the circus. But, well, we'll see what happens. And I suppose now we go to the news. I start in the Justice File this week from Breitbart. A murder suspect and his alleged victim. This is from Bladen County, North Carolina. A murder suspect and his alleged victim wound up in the same jail cell last week. Yeah. Earlier this year, Eric Bennett had been previously charged with attempted murder. Well, this Wednesday passed, one of his alleged victims, Sean Melvin, was arrested for failure to appear in court, failure to pay child support, driving on a revoked license, and generally just being an all-around dirtbag. He ends up in jail, and he's placed in the same cell with Bennett, who had been charged with his attempted murder. Well, the one dirtbag immediately attacked the other, and the other was taken to the hospital and treated for a laceration to his head. You know, modern American society has, in too many cases, become like the Russian front. I mean, there's just no good guys to root for. In this story, there's no one good to root for. And that's where we find ourselves as we launch this week's edition of the Weekly Worldview, as we head into the Labor Day holiday, a communist holiday that we don't generally celebrate here at the McBurney compound, except for taking the day off. Oh, we do that. But I'll be working. I will be working on my database tomorrow and be working hard on Labor Day just to resist the communist influence and to thumb my nose at the communists who started Labor Day. I tried to do some research on that, but you know what? It got really boring and I just left it aside. I'd much rather talk about Russia and Vladimir Putin. This week, according to the Telegraph, a painting was seized by the police in Russia. The painting showed President Vladimir Putin wearing a tight-fitting slip and brushing the hair of Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, who was wearing knickers and a bra. So you get it? The painting was implying that Vladimir and Dmitry are secret closet homosexuals. Yes. Now, police officers also removed a picture of the head of the Russian Orthodox Church. The painting depicted the church leader's torso covered in tattoos. Why do the homos promote their lifestyle as if it is ascendant and superior, while simultaneously implying that their adversaries practice that very same lifestyle in secret and it's something to be ashamed of? I know why. It's for the same reason that the American Academy of psychobabblers, for 100 years they defined homosexuality as a mental illness, and that's why. It's because they're generally mentally ill. By the way, over in St. Petersburg, according to the Telegraph, the G20 summit will be held. I think that, is that to test the new Infiniti car? The G20, is that? I'm not sure what that's all about. Anyway, St. Petersburg was one of the first Russian cities to introduce the now infamous new law banning the spread of gay propaganda. You know what the problem is in Russia? It's very similar to the problem we have here in America, is that once you decriminalize criminal behavior, it's hard then to pass laws against people promoting that behavior. We all need to get back to the fundamentals and realize that homosexuality should be a crime and that homosexuals should be treated as what they are, sick people who need help. And then we wouldn't have a problem. We wouldn't have to pass laws against propagandizing for criminal behavior. But Russia finds themselves every bit as schizophrenic as the West. And it's just a shame to watch. But there we are. And here we are. And thank you for being here, by the way. Had I already said that? Thank you again for joining us. Now we jump into the Bad Religion file. This story's about the Pope, as you can well imagine. From the Telegraph again, over in the United Kingdom. The head of the state there in the Vatican, Pope, what is this Pope's name here? Pope Francis. Pope Francis. Now, when people go to see Pope Francis, or when Pope Francis sees other people in an official setting, and not just Pope Francis, but you pick a pope, any pope, the protocol requires visitors to bow to the pope when they meet him there at the Holy See over in Vatican City. But Francis, he met Queen Rania of Jordan. She's a Muslim queen of a Muslim country. And what did the pope do? Well, he bowed to her. And she was standing right there next to King Abdullah II. And the Pope bowed to the Muslim queen of a Muslim country. Well, Pope Benedict, no, Francis, whatever your name is. Can't hard to keep track of the popes these days. Pope Francis, with the liberals and the communists who are running your church, you included at the very top, I'll give you a little bit of advice when it comes to bowing to Islamic monarchs. My advice to you, Pope, get used to it. Yes, get used to it. And consider yourself lucky that you return to a standing position with your head, Mr. Pope Francis. Yes, they say in the article he's not big on protocol. Well, if he's not big on protocol, what's he doing bowing to a Muslim monarch, for crying out loud? That's the bad religion file. Now we go to the worst religion file. This is from the New York Post. I don't know if I can pronounce this lady's name, and I don't want to mess it up. Isia Noreen is the young lady's name. She's a poor mother of five from the tiny village of Itanwali in central Pakistan. And for 4 years, she has languished in a prison cell, facing a sentence of death by hanging. The New York Post excerpted portions of her new memoir titled Blasphemy. The memoir was dictated to her husband from prison, and he related to a French journalist. The book is about to be released, and half of the proceeds will go to support Isia Noreen and her family as she languishes there in prison. Her crime? Her crime. She used the same cup as fellow workers, other Muslim women. She says that water served by a Christian woman is regarded as unclean. And so she drank water out of the same cup as the Muslims, and they freaked out. And they said that she had better convert to Islam to make up for her sin. And she said to them, you know, I think Jesus would see it differently from Mohammed, at which point they went absolutely berserk. And they called her a filthy Christian animal. How dare you speak of our prophet in that way? And the next day, a group of vigilantes came and had her arrested. She's been in prison for 4 years. Now, the New York Post reports that the Pakistani government, so her crime, by the way, is being a Christian and mentioning the name of Jesus Christ within the hearing of Muslims and apparently drinking from the same cup as these other fruit pickers. She's a fruit picker. Well, the New York Post reports that the Pakistani government is embarrassed by Ms. Noreen's case, but they're still refusing to release her. Why? Well, because of angry protests by extremists. That's right. These governing officials in Pakistan don't want to be killed by the mad crowds of foaming at the mouth, riotous Muslims who can't even stand to hear the name of Jesus Christ spoken of in public without threatening to kill people. By the way, two governing officials there in Pakistan who have already spoken out on her behalf have been murdered. Anyway, so if you think we got it bad here, we don't have it bad here yet. But this is what's in the future if the Pope keeps bowing to the Muslims and if the church keeps allowing immorality to define the church. The modern Christian church is not defined by Christian principles anymore, it seems. More and more, it's defined by tolerance for immorality and even promotion of immorality. And where there is a vacuum of righteousness, Islam will come in. They're happy to fill it. And they even got the Pope bowing down, for crying out loud. It's unbelievable. Anyway, so we should pray for Isia Noreen as she languishes in prison. And also Pastor Abedini over there in Iran, he still languishes in prison. We're going to have a prayer rally for him. I believe it's September 26th. September 23rd, September 26th. We're going to have a prayer rally. They're having rallies all over the country. And I'm sponsoring the prayer rally for Pastor Abedini here in Denver on the west steps of the Capitol. Well, me just by name. It's being sponsored by Denver Bible Church. Well, we're going to pray for our Christian brother who is experiencing true persecution along with Isia Noreen and others, hundreds, maybe thousands of others just like them, whose lives are in danger simply for expressing their faith in the Savior of the world, whose name is Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the Creator, and the Judge of all the earth. And what do I got to say to you Muslims and you heathens? Get used to it. That's right. You're going to have to, she might have to languish for a little while, but you're going to have to live with Jesus Christ as the king and as the authority. Every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that he is Lord. You're going to have to deal with that for a long time. Eternity even. So there. So keep your chin up, Christians. In the end, we win. And let's stand with each other and let's help each other and let's pray for each other. Because we need each other. All right. Now, on to the science. Really? File. This is from Sky News over in London. Life on Earth may have started millions of miles away on Mars, according to scientists. Oh, scientists? They're really smart. We should read what they have to say. Well, here's what they have to say. An element believed to be crucial to the origin of life would have only been available on the surface of the red planet at the time that life was allegedly seeded here on this planet. These seeds of life, according to Sky News, probably arrived on Earth in meteorites blasted off Mars by impacts or volcanic eruptions, according to geochemist Professor Stephen Benner. That's what he has to say. Professor Benner teaches at the Westheimer Institute for Science and Technology. What the Ruth Westheimer Institute? What's the Westheimer Institute? I never heard of the school. I never heard of this guy. But I have heard this theory before. He says that the evidence seemed to be building that we are actually all Martians, he said with a straight face. And people from the British press actually wrote it down as if this was serious news. He also says it's lucky we ended up here on Earth because Earth has turned out to be the better of the two planets for sustaining life. He says if our hypothetical Martian ancestors had remained on Mars, there might not have been a story to tell. Our hypothetical Martian ancestors. Emphasis on the hypothetical. Where does that come from? Hypothetical. Hypo less than thetical theory. Less than a theory. So what he's offering is a little bit less than a theory, and that's why it lands in this week's science. Really? File. Professor Benner from the Ruth Westheimer Institute said that the element molybdenum was thought to be a catalyst that helped organic molecules develop into the first living things. I don't know who thought that. Maybe Ruth Westheimer thought that. And that's why they named the school after her. I don't know. A catalyst, anyways. He says this form of molybdenum couldn't have been available on Earth at the time life first began because 3 billion years ago, the surface of the Earth had very little oxygen. But Mars did have oxygen, he said, as if he knew. And all the young co-eds were very impressed. He says it's yet another piece of evidence which makes it more likely that life came to Earth on a Martian meteorite rather than actually starting on this planet as recorded in certain books like the Bible. I added that, by the way. He would never mention the Bible, never, ever, out there at the Ruth Westheimer Institute. No, no, no. He also said analysis of a Martian meteorite recently showed that there was boron on Mars. And we now believe that the oxidized form of molybdenum was there too. So because boron was there, he now believes that some oxidized form of molybdenum was... He's leaving himself plenty of wiggle room here to adjust this theory as time goes forward, as the evolutionists are wont to do. He's left himself plenty of room to alter. He says another reason why life would have struggled to start on early Earth was that it was likely to have been covered by water. He says the whole Earth was covered. Finally, one point upon which we can agree. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we're moving along here as we attack this week the likes of, people who say that life began on Mars. Oddly enough, there's none of it left. But Earth is teeming with life. How fortunate we are. All right. So now, from the science, really, file, we move on to the justice system file, formerly the justice file. But it's alternately now just a system, And also, I have another file, Just an Industry, because justice has just become an industry. It's just a system that produces busy work for lots of lawyers and paralegals and other people associated with trying to contain the epidemic of crime that is engulfing the nation. And speaking of crime, let's go to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is a Supreme Court justice, has officiated at her first homosexual wedding this past weekend. See, we went to a wedding. So did Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She went to a wedding. I'm sure it was blatantly pagan. Her wedding was as pagan as ours was Christian. Anyway, she officiated. She didn't just attend the wedding and sit in the pew and clap and weep and, you know, wipe her nose with a tissue. She actually married these two people. Who got married? Well, she officiated this past Saturday at the marriage of Michael Kaiser, the president of the Kennedy Center, and John Roberts. Wait a minute. John Roberts is on the Supreme Court, too. Well, oh, this is a different John Roberts. John Roberts is, according to the article from the AP, he is a government economist, another homo working for the government. Big shock there. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg did it. She actually did the whole ring ceremony. You may kiss the, what do you say? You may kiss the groom. I don't even think they're allowed to use groom. You may kiss your partner, she said. What's that? You don't want to get to, I'll move on, okay? I apologize. My extremely attractive audio engineer, a little upset that the homosexuals have reared their ugly heads so early in the broadcast. Anything else from this story? She has another ceremony planned for September. we think she'll be marrying one of the other lesbians on the Supreme Court, and that may or may not be John Roberts. She's like 97 years old. Living proof that God is not actively involved in human history right now is the fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is approaching 100 years old. John Roberts may have made the transition to sex change by September. You never know. That would mean she could marry him, her, whatever.
Well, so he should just marry a woman.
Who, John Roberts?
No,
that is. Oh, Ginsburg?
No, which one?
It gets very confusing. See, this is the point I try to make. Once you start gender swapping and all that, you can barely even report the news anymore. People can barely understand what's going on. All we know right now is it appears that John Roberts is betrothed to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think that's what the story means, but it's fairly confusing, so I reserve the right to modify that story in the near future if necessary. All right. Another one from the Justice System file, and this one's not even funny. This is from the Billings Gazette in Billings, Montana. Now, I know all you East Coast liberals and all you people who live out in La La Land, you would think that the breadbasket, the center of the country, the High Plains, the Midwest, the Bible Belt, that there's lots of conservative activity going on out here. And maybe this is the hope for the nation because the coasts are just lost to hell in a handbasket. But, well, don't get your hopes up because let's go to Montana. A Yellowstone County district judge last week ordered a former senior high school teacher convicted of raping a 14-year-old female student. He was sentenced to 30 days in jail. Yeah, Judge G. Todd Baugh sentenced Stacy Dean Rambold initially to 15 years in prison, but he suspended all but 31 days of the sentence. By the way, not too long after the rape of this young female student, she committed suicide. Her name was Charisse Morales. Her mother reports that the then 49-year-old man who was a teacher in the government school system had an ongoing relationship with the 14-year-old Morales while the case was pending. And just a few weeks before her 17th birthday, Morales committed suicide. Well, the girl's death, according to the Billings Gazette, the girl's death caused problems for the prosecution, and in July of 2010, they offered the rapist a deal. Yep, they offered him to enter into a deferred prosecution agreement. He has to go to treatment. They put the case on hold for 3 years. And if he finishes treatment, all the charges will be dismissed. Well, he failed out of treatment. Why? Because he's a rapist and a pervert and a felon and a capital criminal. He failed out of treatment, so it was revoked. The deal was off. He went to trial. Now, his criminal history includes only one traffic violation, but now he will be required to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life, according to his attorney. He was looking for some sympathy, I guess. Well, he's going to have to register as a sex offender for his whole life. Well, he raped a child. He should be put to death.
Plus 90.
Death plus 99 years. There we go. You could be a lawyer. You could be a judge. You could be a legislator. Death plus 99 years is what he should have got. Let's see here. his lawyer, prior to sentencing, told the judge that, listen, my client, who's the rapist who raped the child who then committed suicide, the lawyer said, my client has lost his home, he's lost his marriage, he's lost his career, he's been branded on the internet as some kind of pervert. Please consider how he's been punished already to this point, his defense lawyer says to the judge. And so the judge gives the guy 30 days. Now listen to why this judge should be tried and sentenced and executed for what he's done. The judge said that he had listened to recorded statements of the 14-year-old girl before her death and believes that while she was a troubled youth, the judge said, this is the judge, he said the girl was, quote, as much in control of the situation as the 49-year-old teacher. This is what the judge said about this girl. He also said that the young girl was, quote, older than her chronological age, unquote. At which point, her father should have leapt over the banister and strangled the judge. But the young girl's father is nowhere to be found. Read the whole story, researched it. No mention of her father anywhere ever. For all we know, she didn't even know her father, which probably led her to be troubled or at least contributed to it. And now she's committed suicide. And this rapist of a child has been sentenced to 30 days in jail. It's just a system at this point. Well, maybe it's just an industry. Consider this about the industry, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the Business Insider. The California Supreme Court has voted to allow the release of convicted serial rapist Christopher Hubbard. Christopher Hubbard is 64 years old, and he's a convicted serial rapist who has admitted to raping and sexually assaulting at least 38 women in California over the past decades. He's going to be released from prison as soon as they can find housing for him. Yes, they're going to find housing for him. On top, talk about adding insult to injury. The first insult is you didn't put him to death. Now the injury, you're going to release him off into the community. And now a third insult, you're going to actually find housing for him. Well, the Santa Clara County Deputy District Attorney, she says that what Mr. Hubbard is to experience is it's a super intensive parole. It's more intensive than any state parole or county probation out there. I'm telling you, this is the big one. This is serious, hyper, super, duper intensive parole. He's going to be required to wear a GPS ankle bracelet. He's going to continue treatment. He's going to have to obey a curfew, and he'll be subject to random searches and seizures, drug testing, and even polygraph tests.
With
a death penalty, you kidding? How many people would that employ? One executioner for 15 minutes? This, you got like 40 bureaucrats involved. Okay. Come on, this is an industry. These people need to make a living. They're my cousins. They're my in-laws, the governor's illegitimate children. These people need jobs. The district attorney, what's her name? Vonda Tracy. She says he'll be monitored 24/7. Yeah. He'll be monitored 24/7. She says, unlike his prior release from prison, where he began attacking women again, he'll be monitored 24/7 this time. At which point everybody's going, what do you mean he was released before? And he raped women after he was released? And so now you're going to release him again? This is truly must be important to the industry. This one particular guy will keep 30 to 40 bureaucrats employed for years. And now, the district attorney wants to calm everybody's fears. If you're living in Santa Clara County, she says, now, his release is not going to happen tomorrow. She says, the housing search generally takes 6 months to a year. Why? It's an industry. We got a lot of work to do. You got to find the right kind of house. She says there's a lot of thought that goes into placing these individuals someplace that they can be monitored that's best for community safety. Just, I mean, it is just unbelievable.
I know one place
he could be monitored that would be best for community safety. A graveyard, right? All you have to do is go clean the stone off once a year. Knock the dirt off the stone. And you're right, you don't even have to do that. The decision to release this rapist was made by a panel of professionals at the state hospital who have followed and analyzed his progress. Once they find him a house, then they're going to notify the community, and then the community will have a chance to comment on the location. They're not going to have a chance to do in any way keep him out or do anything like that. But they are going to tell the community where he lives, apparently. And then they'll have a chance to comment and say, well, we're outraged that you're going to put a rapist in our community. And they're going to say, well, don't worry, we're professionals. Officials will have monthly hearings to discuss whether housing has been found for Hubbard. There's another 20 jobs right there for several months. These are jobs created or saved by liberals. They'll have monthly hearings to discuss whether housing has been found. Why do you need monthly meetings to discuss whether or not housing has been found? If you find a house, you found a house. You don't have to discuss whether or not it's been found. It's not theoretical. But hey, we've got people on the payroll and they need stuff to do. If the house can't be found within a year, listen to this. There's a precedent for the judge to order what's called a homeless release. So now Mr. Hubbard goes from not only being a serial rapist maniac, now he becomes a homeless person. Now he's a victim. Now he needs the community more than ever. And hopefully the community there in Santa Clara County will welcome Mr. Hubbard with open arms. That bumper is dedicated to Santa Clara County Deputy District Attorney Vonda Tracy. Thank you very much, Ms. Tracy, for your contribution to the Just an Industry file this week. Very disturbing. I actually become depressed and generally not optimistic. What's the opposite of optimistic? I'm a professional broadcaster. I should know about these words. I'm pessimistic generally about the outlook for the future of Western civilization. I'll be honest with you right now. We were at lunch today. I was the most pessimistic, downer person at the whole table. And I just want to say to my friends at Denver Bible Church, thank you for picking me up and helping me and restoring some faith in my fellow man. That's one of the reasons I have to go to church every week, is because I need an infusion of sanity into my life after being out there and reading the news and listening and dealing with the average unwashed heathen masses out there. It's pretty depressing. So anyway, I get to hang out with some true believers once a week, and even more than once a week sometimes, quite often. And it really does lift me up, but it probably depresses them. You know, at least they can look at me and say, hey, at least I'm not that depressed about this whole thing. So at least I lift their spirits a little bit by helping them to realize that they're not as dysfunctional as I am. And that helps them, and, well, we like to help each other. All right. Now, reason number, let's see here. I remember when we started with reasons to keep your kids out of the public school, we started at a round number. We just rounded it off at 666, and we've been going up from there. And I think we're at reason number 702 here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is reason 701, to keep your children out of the government school, or for heaven's sake, get your children out of the public school if at all possible. And might I remind you again, it is possible. From Chicago, CBS reports that administrators with the Chicago Public Schools, CPS, have determined to introduce mandatory sexual health education for kindergarten classes. That's five-year-olds.
You're unbelievable.
Yeah, okay. Well, I agree with that. Mandatory sexual and health education for kindergartners. CPS, Chicago Public Schools, insist that the curriculum will use language that children can understand. Well, that bothers me right there, that you've got adult teachers talking about sex to kids and using language they can understand. That makes me uncomfortable right there, okay? They're going to focus on topics like bullying, correct names for body parts, and the difference between appropriate and inappropriate touching. The last thing I want a government school teacher bureaucrat doing is talking to my kid about touching of any kind, appropriate, inappropriate, any touching. And I don't want them talking about external body parts. And we all know that bullying is a code word for introducing your children to homosexuality. Tolerance for it, acceptance of it, celebration of it, and if at all possible, participation in it. Let's see. CPS Chief Health Officer Stephanie, she says, as you identify body parts, you talk about should you be touched here or not. I don't want my teacher talking to my kids about this. I tell you people, if you got your kids into government school, this is the type of deviant pervert. They love this stuff. They want to talk to the kids about it. I've got quotes from a couple of hapless parents. I've got one mother says, I'd like to believe it's not necessary, but I think our culture dictates that you can't start early enough with sex education. Well, her name is Aisha Ahmad. Is that racist to do a black lady's voice? Her name is Aisha. I mean, can't we assume anything anymore? Anyway, so Aisha says she'd like to believe it's not necessary. Well, Aisha, the reason our culture dictates that you can't start early enough with sex education for kids is because you've agreed that that's what the culture dictates. The culture doesn't dictate that, or at least it doesn't have to. Mom, you moron. Unbelievable. I have another quote from another parent. No, I've got another quote from Stephanie, the CPS chief health officer. CBS reports that students will also take a look at the different family structures that exist in today's society. And Stephanie says, whether that means there's two moms at home, I mean, everyone's home life is different. And we'll introduce the fact that we all have diverse backgrounds. So you hear what that means? This perverted, corrupt heathen who's in charge of teaching tens of thousands of kids is going to begin teaching them at 5 years old
that having two moms or two dads or a dad that's gone or a mom that's strung out on heroin, we're all diverse. It's all equal. Your family's just as good as my family. Our families are all diverse. It's all good. Some conservative organizations oppose this. Do they have anything? Some conservative groups, who the article does not mention, says that what the CPS is trying to do is to normalize homosexuality. And it's way more than that. It's to normalize sexuality at all with five-year-old kids. That right there, I don't care if it's homosexual, heterosexual, any sexual. Anything sexual with five-year-old kids is criminal. That's all. It's child abuse. Parents are encouraged to review the curriculum. And if, which that right there would be pretty uncomfortable and disgusting. And if they are uncomfortable with any lesson, their child can opt out of that lesson.
Well, then they're
going to
get bullied.
Well, they'll get bullied. Well, here's the thing. They make it as difficult as possible to opt your child out. Oh, do you have problem with section C5-A? Okay, he can opt out of that. What about C-53B? And C-549. And it goes on and on and on. You sit there, spend your whole day opting your kid out. Just opt your kid out of the government schools. I mean, isn't it obvious to everyone? Apparently not. So that's reason number 702. No, 701 to keep your kids out of the government schools. And now, in a related story, we go to the politics file. This is from CNS News. The Chicago Public School, as we just read, is mandating that kindergarten students get sex education. And Barack Obama says, well, it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. You'll remember that at a Planned Parenthood convention back in 2007, a teenage girl who called herself a sex education peer educator, that's what she called herself. She worked in the D.C. public schools. Do you remember this? We reported on this. This little pagan teenager asked then-Senator Obama what he would do to encourage the teaching of medically accurate, age-appropriate, and responsible sex education. Barry answered, he says, you know, I remember Alan Keyes. I ran against Alan Keyes, and I remember him using this in his campaign against me, saying, Barack Obama supports teaching sex education to kindergartners. And, you know, I didn't know what to tell Mr. Keyes, but it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do, to provide age-appropriate sex education, science-based sex education in the schools, unquote. That's what Barry. So Barry's all for it, and he's been for it. And when this comes up again, he's not ashamed that he was for it. He says, yeah, I was for it then. I'm for it now. Hey, we don't want these kids punished with babies, right? It's the last thing we want. So not only are the heathens corrupting your children in school, but they stand up and they're proud of it. They consider themselves some kind of societal progressives to be teaching five-year-olds about things that five-year-olds simply don't need to know about, shouldn't be taught, certainly by adults who their own background is questionable, in my opinion. If they're teaching in the government schools, they're inherently unqualified to discuss anything of any import with a child. Anyway, now let's go to the homeschool file. And for that, we go back to Germany. It's from WorldNet Daily. Dirk and Petra Wunderlich have battled for several years against Germany's World War II-era requirement that all children submit to the indoctrination programs of the nation's public schools. Last Thursday, at 8 a.m., as the children of Dirk and Petra were beginning their homeschool classes, a team of 20 social workers, police, and special agents stormed the family's home. A judge signed an order authorizing the immediate seizure of the children by force, citing the parents' failure to cooperate with the authorities to send the children to school. The judge also authorized the use of force against the children, reasoning that such force might be required because the children had, quote, adopted their parents' opinions regarding homeschooling and that no cooperation could be expected from either the parents or the children. The children were taken by force from the home. They were taken to unknown locations, and the only fact that was reported to the parents regarding the locations of their children and when the family might be reunited was when the officials promised the parents that they would not be seeing their children anytime soon. Unquote. Michael Ferris, founder of Homeschool Legal Defense Association, said in a report, the actions violated a number of established European precedents, including provisions of the European Convention on Human Rights. He says this latest act of seizing these four beautiful, innocent children is an outrageous act of a rogue nation. If there's any country where we should be threatening military force right now, it's this one right here in Germany. Let my people go, is what should be said to the Germans. But I forgot, Barry and the government, they're not on our side, so they're all for this. He goes on to say a number of other things that are very lawyerly. And then in 2010, an immigration judge granted asylum in the U.S. to a family which fled Germany because their children were also to be forced to go to the public schools. We reported on them, the Romikes. The Obama administration has obtained an order that the family must return to Germany. The Obama administration has urged in court, parents essentially have no right to determine how and what their children are taught. Leaving that authority with the government, of course. Sieg Heil, said Barry. So anyway, I suppose we're really blessed here in America at this particular moment in time. Just lucky to be here, just like the Martians from earlier in the show. We just happen to be lucky. No, it's not that. The fact that we have the ability to teach our own children at home and to opt out of the government schools is fairly uniquely American. And it's based on the sacrifice and work of hundreds and thousands of parents over the past 50 years. And it's something that we have to fight for every day. And one thing I would say to my homeschooling compatriots out there is try to do a good job educating your children, because they are the ones who are going to have to run the world, because the idiots in the government schools are going to be hapless, feckless, and incompetent, unable to run the world, and someone's going to have to do it, and it's going to have to be our kids. And so try to do a good job, and don't embarrass us out there, okay? We've got a lot of important work to do, and we appreciate you being on the team. Don't give up. Don't give up. I needed the whole thing. I couldn't stop. I couldn't interrupt that. It's keeping me going. All right, a little infusion of encouragement there, folks. And from there, we go to reason number 702 to keep your kids or get your kids out of the government schools. This is from Detroit, Michigan. It's from CBS there. Many Detroit teachers are struggling in the wake of budget cuts and overcrowded classrooms. Well, that's probably a story that has been true since time immemorial, right? Teachers struggling. They don't have enough money. They don't have enough school supplies. I've heard it my whole life since I was a little kid, and my teacher sent me home when I had to sell chocolate to my parents and their friends to fund some program at the school. Well, you know, we just don't get enough money. They weep all over and tell you how hard it is to be a teacher 8 months a year and how difficult life is. Anyway, so they're struggling there in Detroit. We all know about Detroit's financial woes. They're well documented. So, what are some Detroit teachers doing to offset their struggles in the classroom? Well, they're signing up on websites like seekingarrangement.com, and they're becoming what is known in common parlance as sugar babies. Are you familiar with this term? But it sounds kind of creepy, doesn't it? A sugar baby, right? You know this is not going in a good direction. A sugar baby is a younger female who seeks financial assistance from wealthy men online. Yeah. In the Detroit school system alone, over 200 teachers are moonlighting as sugar babies to offset wage cuts. Isn't this the same thing they did in the 1870s when the schools had difficulty with money?
I don't think they did, actually.
I don't. Even though there wasn't an internet in 1870, I can assure you that teachers did not prostitute themselves in order to get a little extra money to buy the kids pencils. But that's what's happening in Detroit. They go to websites like the one I just mentioned and shall not mention again. They call it a dating website. And they use the term dating loosely, very loosely. The teachers are doing it, the female teachers. They go on the website, they sign up, and they say, hey, if you're a rich guy, I'll prostitute myself for you, and you pay me some money. I'll date you.
Yeah.
Yes, I apologize. We use that term loosely. Anyway, if you're in Detroit, don't worry, everything's fine, because in the Philadelphia school system, there are over 670 Philadelphia teachers registered on a similar website. And down in Miami, over 500 teachers in the government school system are signed up as prostitutes online.
Wow.
Yeah. One of the people running the website there, he says a young, attractive teacher can be a valuable commodity. This guy hasn't, his website should be shut down. He should be arrested. But this is what happens when we decide we can tolerate a certain level of sexual immorality. Once you decriminalize sexual immorality, there simply is no bottom to that. Eventually, you have teachers by day, prostitutes by night. And, the prostitution ends up bleeding into the classroom. I'm sorry. Pretty soon, we'll have prostitutes teaching 5-year-olds sex ed. Not pretty soon. I'm sure it's going on right now. Unbelievable. Now, the website and the proprietors of the website, they describe a modern sugar daddy as a successful and generous man who's willing to pamper and offer financial help or gifts to a young person in return for friendship and companionship. And then they go on to describe what the sugar baby is, and I'm just getting disgusted. That's reason number 702. And now, is this reason 703? I think it is.
Three?
I believe so. McKinley Park, Illinois. If a Chicago alderman has his way, the city could someday use drones buzzing through the skies as part of an effort to keep students safe as they walk to school. So in Chicago, it's such a war zone that the aldermen are thinking about using drones to walk kids to school. He says, why not use drones for safe passage? This is how bad it's... What's a liberal to do? You can't punish criminals. You can't call evil by its name. You have to tolerate all manner of wickedness, corruption, and vile behavior. And what you end up with is, well, maybe we can have armed drones fly over the kids and get them to school safe so that their prostitute teachers can molest them once they get there.
Yeah.
A journalism professor at the University of Nebraska disagrees. He says using drones to patrol the city streets for school kids is not a good idea. That must be why he's a professor. He's really smart. He says you have something with spinning blades over the top of children that could fall out of the sky. That would seem unwise. Can't disagree with that. It's almost as unwise as sending your kids into the government school factory as it is. And then there's legal questions, according to this journalism professor, whose name I will not use because I don't care, because he's a journalism professor, which means he wasn't smart enough to get a real degree. He says there's legal questions. What if a camera on the drone catches one of the kids that it's walking to school committing a crime? Is that admissible in court? Do police have to get a warrant to watch for those kids? At which point someone slapped the guy and said, this is ridiculous that we're even talking about this. Let's move on to another story. from the domestic tranquility file, a one-year-old girl was shot dead in her babysitter's arms in New Orleans, prompting the city's mayor to declare, enough is enough, the shooting has got to stop, said the mayor. So he makes an allusion to the gun, but he doesn't make an allusion to the one-year-old. And the horrific nature of this crime. So he's completely missing the point. He's not qualified to be the mayor. His name is Mitch Landrieu, and he should be rowed out on a barge into Lake Pontchartrain, and the barge should be set ablaze, figuratively, only. London Samuels was 1 year old. She was struck by a bullet fired into her 18-year-old nanny's back as the nanny carried the child home from the park. The young woman is expected to survive. Little London Samuels, the one-year-old girl, was killed. Lyndon's mother, that was her caretaker, her babysitter, was shot. The mother was working at a cafe when the shooting happened. The father, I think, does show up somewhere later in the story. Maybe, maybe not. Let me see here. I was hoping I could quote. I have a quote from the father. Where is it here? Maybe. Oh, here it is. The father's name is, this is embarrassing. Well, I'm telling you what, when you read these stories, it's really hard to find anything about the father. And so I marked it up as best I could, but it's such a tiny mention of the dad that it's hard for me to find it at this point. I apologize. The father said that the girl loved being around me and her mama. She was our world. She was the highlight of every day. She was happy. When I was down, she would crawl into bed with me and say, Dada, and hit me in the face and make me smile. He says he's full of anger toward the gunman. Good. No word on the state of their relationship and all of that. But hey, at least they mentioned the father. So a one-year-old shot to death. And the mayor says the shooting has got to stop. Pretty sad commentary on the quality of politicians in the New Orleans area. Again, from the domestic tranquility file, an 18-year-old man has been convicted of murder in the shooting of a baby. Yeah, the March 21st killing of 13-month-old Antonio Santiago. DeMarcus Elkins was found guilty of... DeMarcus Elkins now faces life in prison for shooting a baby. Why? Well, at the time of the shooting, he was only 17, and that's too young to face the death penalty under Georgia law. Really? Tell that to the 13-month-old. You say 17's too young to face the death penalty? Well, what about the 13-month-old, Antonio Santiago? He wasn't too young. I would say that Marquise Elkins isn't too young either. Prosecutor said during the trial that Elkins and an accomplice, another 15-year-old punk criminal bastard, they stopped the mom and demanded money. They pointed a small .22 caliber revolver at her and demanded money several times. When the mom refused to turn over money, they shot her in the leg and shot the baby between the eyes. The killing drew national attention, according to the Associated Press story, but that's barely has any attention anymore because this happens all the time now. It's kind of depressing. All right, so I wanted to end with something a little more upbeat. I don't think I have anything. Let's see. We've got a report from a Rolling Stone contributing editor who says Aaron Hernandez was grossly overcharged. He says, I think the case is not only beatable, but I think Aaron Hernandez will be back in the NFL within 3 or 4 years. And CBS Sports reports that if Mr. Hernandez indeed gets out of prison in the next 3 to 4 years, he could be back in the NFL before you know it, and there will be a number of teams interested in hiring Mr. Hernandez. What's that? No, this is not an uplifting story. This is just what I had left, and I wanted to just say the fact that Tim Tebow is out of the NFL. Well, I guess Aaron Hernandez is out of the NFL too, and I guess this Rolling Stones editor thinks that he's going to do okay. His name's Paul Solotaroff, some communist filth of no doubt has a journalism degree, writes for the Rolling Stone. Anyway, I'm going to keep track of Timmy, and Mr. Solotaroff can keep track of Mr. Hernandez, and well, we'll compare notes in a few years and see how all that goes. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, Des Moines activist Midge Slater took to the podium in front of a bunch of politicians in Iowa and spent 5.5 minutes praying, thanking God for abortion. During the entire prayer, the two front runners running for governor of Iowa kept their heads bowed and their eyes closed as this Des Moines pro-abort activist prayed. She said, quote, "We give thanks, O Lord, for the doctors, both current and future, who provide quality abortion care. We pray for increased financial support for low-income women and access to contraception, abortion, and child care. We pray for women in developing nations. May they have access to employment, education, birth control, and abortion. And we pray for women who've been made afraid by their paternalistic religion." And what did these two idiots, State Senator Jack Hatch and State Representative Tyler Olson, do during the prayer? Did they walk out? Did they rebuke her? No, they kept their eyes bowed, their eyes closed and their heads bowed, and joined her in this group prayer thanking God for abortion. And that's Iowa, right? This isn't San Francisco. It's Iowa. Pretty despicable. Well, I guess that's all we have. Now you can see why I'm depressed. I'll be back next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, at Personhood USA, at American Right to Life and Theology Online.com. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.